All right. Hey, welcome back. This week, this episode, actually, we're going to be talking about the process of banking. So with the infinite banking concept, we know there's two parts to it. There's the process and there's the product. Next week, we'll tackle the product. This week, we're going to dive into the process. So what do we hit on this week, Paul?
Yeah, really, we talk about the banking process, right? The movement of money. And then we also hit on the similarities of how the infinite banking concept is very similar to what you're already doing with your normal commercial bank, where you deposit your check, right? Where you take loans from. So stay tuned just to learn about how you're likely already doing something very similar. We're just going to do it in a different place by practicing IBC.
Hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast. All right, nice backdrop, Paul. You got a nice little painting. It looks very Italian from here.
Yeah, it's one of my old officer's wives painted it for me back at Fort Bliss. It's been on the podcast before.
Yep, it has. It's been featured.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, very, very Italian. Fougere.
Yeah. Fougery.
Yeah. Man, I'm had to come to the office today to record. We got the kids coming home from school soon. Man, I got to get out of here soon because it's like 80 degrees and sunny out there. It's nice.
Beautiful day here too.
The neighborhood pools early.
Nice.
So, and we got a birthday at home. So we have so many birthdays. We have two in April, two in May, two in June, one in July, and then the other two are in November. So we got a lot of birthday celebrations going on.
Yeah, that's right. You're going to be 46 next month.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll be following shortly.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
No, I'm looking forward to it. Closer to 50 than 40. That's kind of crazy.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. But the older you get, the younger everybody looks as they, you know, older people. Like my mom, maybe that didn't make any sense. My mom, you know, she's 70. You know, Hannah's parents, 70. Like, they don't look 70.
Right.
So I still got a lot of years of not looking old ahead of me, I think.
Yeah. A lot of it's genetic too. Like, you can usually tell by looking at your parents, like how you're going to look. You know, I remember as a kid, we had this kid I grew up with. I remember his dad was 36. My dad was older. He was in his 40s already. But this dude looked 60.
Well, that's the way they all looked back in the 80s and 90s, man. Like a 40-year-old was just over the hill, done. I'm wearing cardigans and got gray hair.
Yeah. And I don't know. It was just, you know, he didn't drink or smoke or any of those things. A very clean life. That's the way he looked. He just looked.
It's old. All mental. And you start thinking you're old, you're going to start looking old. That's the way I see it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to talking, man. I think we got a lot to cover today. This is going to be the first of two episodes about infinite banking, the process versus the product. Because so many people out there who don't truly understand infinite banking quite yet get it mixed up. Like it's the product. Like that's the only thing that it is. And that's the only thing that matters. And the haters out there, the only thing they talk about is the product. What they miss is the process. So we want to talk about the banking process today.
Yes. And of course, the haters know nothing about the product anyway, because you can watch any number of videos on YouTube, which I have. And these are certified financial planners, right? They're licensed in selling life insurance. They know nothing about it.
Well, most of them got like one online course on life insurance during their certification, perhaps.
Yeah.
Kind of like doctors get, you know, a total of a single morning before lunch training on nutrition during medical school.
We don't want people to be healthy. We want them to be sick.
No knock to our doctors out there.
Yeah. Nope.
But
we love
it's just a knock to the system. The system, like whether it's education, the education system, the medical health system, the insurance industry, the financial industry, it's all a system. And unless you kind of get out of that system, you're only going to know what the system tells you to know.
Correct.
So, and that's where we come in. So infinite banking, the infinite banking concept, it is, like Nelson says on page 3, this is not about investments of any kind. It is about how one finances the things of life. How one finances. Does that say anything about a product?
Nope.
This is all about a function. It's functional. It's not about a specific product. You use a product, and we'll get to that on the next episode. But it's all about the process. And people who come to us, and we can tell they're not ready, it's usually because they don't understand the process. The product's pretty simple when you get down to it.
It's a very simple.
It's the process that trips people up because they don't understand how conventional banking works, how fractional reserve banking works. And that helps. If you can understand the banking system to, you know, at least a foundational level, and we'll kind of compare banks versus policies and the differences during this episode.
Yeah, and the similarities.
So you do the same things, just in a different way, and different benefits from doing it different ways.
Right. And right below where Dave just read that on page 3 at the top right, you know, as Nelson says as well, right? But the process of banking goes on no matter what is happening. So in essence, it's about banking.
It's about banking.
Right. And that's what we're trying to make you understand with this, I think, this episode today. Just kind of just dumb it down. Not that people are dumb, but just to really kind of keep banging away at this idea that focus on process first, right? Understanding the process, understanding the problem that this process is going to solve. That's so important. Because if you know if there's a problem, you're not looking for a solution, right? So we help you identify the problem, and then we give you, you know, we help you understand the solution as well. So
absolutely. Anyway. Well, let's start with the process here. So infinite banking is a capitalization strategy. It's not an investment strategy. It's a capitalization strategy. So Paul, you and I talked about what does that mean to us? Why don't you explain that, dumb it down, if you will, but what does that mean to you?
Right. So look at yourself and ask yourself, if I lost my job today, how long could I live and pay my expenses, pay my rent, pay my mortgage, my car payments, my insurance, whatever? How long could you live without working? That is going to give you an indicator of how well capitalized you are. Meaning for us, it means this: how much liquid assets can you turn into cash right now and use for those things, and use as, in other words, money, right? So a lot of people like to brag, Dave, about, oh, my house is paid off. Like, that's great. We've talked about that before. That's fine. Yeah. But it's not liquid. So that doesn't count. It could be liquid depending on your market, and you could sell it within 30 or 45 days.
Well, I suppose it depends on how you define liquid. Everything's liquid given enough time.
Right.
Maybe most things, right?
So
what does liquid mean to you?
Short term, let's say you can get to the money in a week. You can turn an asset into spendable money in less than a week.
Okay, so that's your definition. And I think that's a great definition for some of my cash value, which is, you know, the capitalization portion of my banking process and my whole life insurance policy, is that cash value. I need to be able to access a certain amount of it within a week for emergencies, for investment opportunities that are not going to wait around for me to sell off an asset and get liquid cash and go buy that asset or participate in that opportunity. So, but different people have different needs. We have a lot of investors who are, say, real estate investors. What is their definition of liquidity? It's going to be a very short time frame.
Yes, depending, regardless of their business model, really. They're always either in a deal, you know, putting the deal together, looking at the next deal, raising capital, right? If that's what they're doing, looking for other investors. So they're always looking for liquid people with liquid capital, which is funny to me, you know, in a way.
Yes. And if you're one of those investors, maybe you're participating in a syndication, maybe you don't need immediate access to capital. So you can give it a couple days, a week, maybe even a month before you need to invest in this particular opportunity.
Sure.
So that could be your definition of liquid. And maybe there are certain things that could fit that. And then there's some people that maybe liquidity means, maybe I need to be liquid in the next, in about a year, because I know I'm going to be purchasing something in a year. I need liquid cash. And now I got a whole year to be able to sell some assets and put that capital together. So it kind of depends on what your personal definition of liquid is, but everybody's going to need some capital that's liquid in a very short time frame, 1 week or less.
Right. And what's interesting is that when other people know that you have access to liquid capital, that they're calling you quite often, actually. Like I got a call from our buddy, just a few weeks ago asking for, short-term bridge loan. Mm-hmm. It ended up, being funded in another way. So it was all fine, but it was just interesting. He knows I can get to money quickly.
Yeah. No, same here. I was working with somebody yesterday on the phone with them and somebody else. And I was able to get funds over to them this morning because they need it for something. And it's an opportunity for me to put my money to work in a safe place and have some collateral to back it up. So when it comes to capitalization, it's different between the banks and the life insurance company. With the banks, we call that deposits, right? You're going to deposit your money into the bank. With the life insurance company, we call it premium. That's how you capitalize. You pay premium. So the more premium you pay, the more you're capitalizing your system.
Yep. It's very similar, in other words.
Very similar. You're just doing it in a different place. And I guess through a different mode, but it's still the money you're saving that you don't plan to spend right away. You're putting it somewhere. You're either depositing in the bank, or you're paying premium to the company.
In fact, I've seen some of the literature, both from other producers, other life insurance producers, and from life insurance literature put out by the actual companies, where some of the companies actually call them premium deposits.
They do. I mean, yeah. The PDF we talk about here, the premium deposit fund,
right?
Which I guess that is more of a deposit fund because you're depositing money into this fund that's on deposit,
right?
But
it's interesting. So we just call it premium.
We like to call it premium.
Right.
So that's that's one of the steps in the banking process. One of the other things that we all do, and everybody's familiar with in the banking process, is the borrowing aspect. So when you go to a bank to borrow money, what are all the boxes you have to check?
Well, you walk in there and you ask, right? You fill out all the forms, and that's your asking. I need, or maybe I want a new car. You don't need a new car, maybe, but you want it. And you are going to fill out all of the forms and go through their process. Right. So they're going to ask for your checking account statements, or if you're asking from your own bank, they already have them on file. They're going to ask for income verification. Right. So maybe something you have to, hey, call my boss. Here's his number and his email, and you can verify my employment. Right. Which I've had that done, over the years.
Yeah.
And, they're going to check your debt to income ratio. They're going to pull your credit, of course, all these things. And then maybe, or hopefully, they're going to say yes at the end of that process, right?
And they also want you to post collateral. So if you're borrowing money for a car, of course, the car is the collateral because you don't hold the title until that's paid off, right? They have the lien on the title. If it's for a house, the house is collateral. Even if it's a personal loan, they're collateralizing your future income through your personal guarantee.
Yeah. And in the end, right, the bank is going to make itself whole, right? So if the car depreciates and you default on it and it's not enough to cover the note, well, they're coming after other stuff.
Yeah. Well, because they have shareholders and they need to ensure that really protect the shareholders. And I guess if we think about our own money like that, when I'm doing a loan, like you and I had a conversation on the phone yesterday, like my family is my shareholder when it comes to loaning my personal money out.
Right.
So how do I protect my family? So I'm going to take collateral. I'm going to have some way of getting paid back sooner or later if for some reason that person is not able to pay me back according to the terms of the loan.
Right. Somebody called me the other day. He's not a client of ours. He's a client of somebody else's, some of that we appreciate in the business. Similar conversation. And I asked that question to him. I was like, listen, he's new to private lending and stuff. And I was like, well, what are the actual mechanics and process that you're going to have to go through? And if this entity defaults, mm-hmm. and your 100K is out there, right? How are you really going to go get it? What instrument is going to enable you to do that? So I think I gave him a lot of things to think about.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying don't go do things. That's not what I'm saying. But you better be damn sure that there's a way for you to go collect. And if there's not, don't do it.
And you got to be willing to collect. I mean, that's the really tough part. If you're lending
right.
money, that's why it's tough to lend money to friends and family. Because if you have to collect, you're going to feel like a jerk, even though they're the ones they're the jerk for not paying you back, for not holding up their end of the bargain, right? But you're going
right.
to feel like a jerk collecting from them. Right. So, you know, do you intend to do that? That's a whole other podcast.
Right. Whole other discussion. Do you have time to do it?
Right. Yeah. But anyway, borrowing. So that you got to do all that when you go borrow from a bank. And probably everybody listening has been through that at least once. And once is enough to realize you don't want to have to go through that the rest of your life for every car, every house, every opportunity that you want to fund. So
right.
when it comes to borrowing from your policy, what are the steps?
Well, I was just thinking about that. I can just log in here on my computer and request a policy loan. And of course, like Nelson says in the book, you're going to ask the banker, well, how much can I have? Well, how much did you put in there? Right. It's the same thing. So you can borrow against the equity of your policy or policies, as our clients yep. know. And there is no paperwork to fill out. There is no credit check. There is no collateral. The policy is the collateral. But there's nothing beyond that you have to like supply. Like, here's my income verification, right?
Yeah.
And because the life insurance company knows that you're either going to pay off the loan or maybe you just pay the interest, or you're going to graduate, right? And they'll take the proceeds of the death benefit, pay off the loan that you owe them, and then give your beneficiaries the difference of the mm-hmm. of the death benefit, which is the future value of the current cash value. Anyway, it's very simple. In other words, it's I can get to the money now, and it gets direct deposited in my bank account in 3 to 5 days.
Yeah.
Business days.
And they call it online request a loan or loan request. Really, mm-hmm. it's a loan demand. I mean, have you ever had any
no.
questions come back to you like, why do you want this loan? What's it for,
no.
Paul? How are you going to repay it? Or, hey, I'm sorry, we can't do that right now. No, it's been, yep. I have this much available. I want this much coming to me. And they say, how do you want to receive it? Check or bank account?
Yeah, that's so, right. And it's quite easy. And, you know, I spent 33 minutes on the phone today with a military friendly credit union. That has to do with boats. I'm not going to name which one it is, but, dealing with a HELOC issue. I think it's a software glitch on their online portal. And I'm literally trying to make a small HELOC payment to just pay it off, cause I owed like a little bit left from something mm-hmm. I did a few months ago, and I couldn't do it. I had to call. 33 minutes later, we got it resolved.
Yeah.
I've never had that problem. And I know some people have had some policy loan hiccups. But usually it's user error, not company error, right? I've always found it very easy to get policy loans. Very easy. And,
yeah, very,
and seamless.
Very easy.
Seamless.
Okay. Good. So you just made me think of another episode that I just texted you. So we'll do that one maybe next week.
Look at that.
That was part of my plan. I got to write these ideas down as they come, or else I forget. And then I have to start from scratch on thinking of what we need to talk about.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay. So let's go to the next part of the process of banking, which is you've borrowed money. Now, what's next up is repaying that loan. So with the bank, it's banks have structured loan repayments. What that means is the bank is in charge of when you repay that loan, how often you make a payment, how much you pay them, how much principal and interest you pay them, and what happens if you don't pay them. What are the penalties? What are the consequences? That's a structured loan.
Structured loan. You've agreed to their terms when you signed on the dotted line on several pieces of paper, probably, as you signed away all of the collateral that you have to offer, not just the car or the house. You signed away all the collateral that you have.
Yeah. You might have even signed away some of your Fifth Amendment rights and your 14th Amendment rights. Like, seriously, if you look through some old mortgage paperwork, I've signed a document that where I waived some of my constitutional rights by signing that document. Unreal.
It's crazy.
Nobody reads all that.
Nobody does.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, though. So, it's a completely structured loan. The payment is going to be what it's going to be, amortized at 5, 10, 15, 30 years, whatever type of loan it is. And you're going to make that payment every month without question.
And maybe the bank even has the contractual right to call that loan due at any time. To call it due.
Yeah.
Change the terms.
I mean, they could. They reserve the right to do that. I will say, going back to the demand for a policy loan, people are going to, if you read your life insurance contracts, I do think this is important to say that it says that the company has up to 6 months to send, you know, the policy loan demand or request to you, you know, in cash. But that's in the real world, that's not what's happening.
Yeah, that's legalese that is in every single, as far as I know, every single insurance contract.
It's been in my old ones. Yep. It's in my new ones.
Yep. So it's in every single one. And what that does is protect the company in the event of, say, like the Great Depression, where actually loans, they weren't denied. They limited the amount that somebody could receive as a policy loan for about a period of 6 months, I want to say it was. And then it was back open to they could take as much as they had available.
Sure.
It's happened like one time in history that I'm aware of, and that was the Great Depression. So, yeah. Now, that structured policy loan repayments with a bank, with a life insurance company, what's the opposite of structured?
Unstructured.
Unstructured. Yes. So, what that means is there's no structure to the loan repayment. The only thing that the insurance company determines is the interest rate for the next year.
Yes.
And they say, this is what the interest is accumulating at. But other than that, you, the borrower, it's completely up to you to determine what the repayment terms are.
Yeah. And you've talked about some things that you do with policy loans on several episodes lately, actually. And then, so have I. I'm about to pay off some more loans with the proceeds from the sale of this house that I'm sitting in. But prior to last week, I hadn't made any payments on these loans. I had 5 separate policy loans out from 5 different policies.
Yeah.
I had made no payments in the last 90 days.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. You didn't have to be eating rice and beans for a month.
Nope. I didn't change anything about my life.
Didn't change your life. It didn't affect anything in your life having those outstanding loans. And it didn't show up as debt on your personal balance sheet.
Yeah. And again, I don't know if this is the right way to look at it, but this is how I look at it. I look at policy loans as it's the IBC way of pulling money from or against savings. Pulling it from savings is what everyone else would be doing. And when I repay the policy loan, I'm simply putting money back in savings. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, you're putting it back so it's available again. And that's another difference is the repayment. When you make a repayment to the bank, you can't the next month say, "Hey bank, I want that money back." they're going to say, "Well, come get in line and fill out this loan request paperwork and we'll see about that." With the company.
Right. And Nelson
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, and Nelson addresses that in Becoming Your Own Banker, fifth edition, right? He says, you know, I didn't illustrate loans on all these examples. I illustrated either dividend withdrawals or partial surrenders because when people hear the word loan, their brains,
right,
you know, start to misfire and shut down. But just like Dave said, it's more like a revolving door of money or line of credit is how a policy loan really functions.
Yeah. Just so every month, if I make a loan repayment, like today, I got online, I made a repayment towards a loan. Well, as soon as that shows back up as available cash value, which it will in just a few days or maybe a couple weeks from now, mm-hmm. it's there. So next month, if I want that money back, I can take it back and get another loan. Right. With what I just paid them the month before.
Very yep. important to understand you're borrowing against the value, not from yep. it.
Exactly. Well, so that kind of leads into the next process, the next part of the process, which is growth on your money. What do banks give you when you deposit money with them?
Well, up until recently when the interest rates went up, they were giving you almost nothing. I think basically. USA, it was like 0.05 per yeah. year. Now it's there's, funny.
They advertise like we pay 0.06%. Woo-hoo. You know, the bank next door only pays 0.03. Like, and
think about terrible.
How much money they're making on your money, and that's all they're willing to give you.
Right. They're making a killing.
Yeah.
They're loaning it back to you at 5 and they're giving you 0. That's nice. Actually, so their personal right loans now, were.
Yeah, let's say you got it in a high yield savings account right now. You're making 4%.
Sure.
Well, let's say you take $10,000 out of that account. Are you earning 4% on that money anymore?
No.
No, not at all. Because you've removed it from the system. Therefore, they're not going to reward you.
And going back to the book, that's part of the tailwind that Nelson is talking about. He's talking about headwinds and then you want to wait, you know, control the environment. Well, if you're doing traditional banking at a conventional bank, you're not controlling the environment in which you're flying in or operating in the financial space, right? So every time you interrupt the growth of that money, you have interrupted the future compounding forever.
Right.
So you have to really consider that over a long period of time, your entire life, you just keep interrupting the growth of money. That's one of the reasons that you cannot get ahead.
Yes. So let's compare that to the life insurance company. Your equity, which is your cash value, we have a whole episode, I believe, on that, where we dive into that a lot, but your cash value, the amount you can borrow from the insurance company, is really just your equity in the death benefit. So because you're not actually borrowing your own money out, because it's not your money. When you pay premium to the insurance company, it's the insurance company's money. But you build equity. So if you got $50,000 of equity in your cash, against your death benefit, then you can borrow $50,000 from the insurance company. So you can go to the insurance company, borrow the money, but your equity is going to continue to grow and compound. So that when you repay that loan, now you've got more than what you began with when you took that loan in the first place. It doesn't interrupt the growth of those funds. It's akin to leaving all your money in a savings account, earning that 4% high yield that you can get right now. And you take money out, but you still get to earn on it as if you never did. It's the same concept, but banks won't do that for you.
No. And they could probably because they're really making a killing on you.
Sure they are. Yeah.
They're making a killing. Yep. No, it's great. And, you know, that's part of – I love explaining that to people in the process because they'll always have that question just really because they've read about it and they just want to clarify that that's really occurring. And of course it is. We're not going to get into the direct recognition, non-direct recognition discussion. We've talked about that before. Could there be some small differences? You know, maybe. I don't care one way or another, right? You can practice IBC with either type of policy, but we prefer non-direct, and that's what we have, and that's what we own. But isn't that nice? So if you've created a tailwind in your financial life, you don't have to interrupt it. You can kind of, not that it's a license to spend, but you can borrow from your savings or against your savings without having to worry about oh, I just permanently interrupted the compound curve of that money. Because you didn't.
It's great. Nope, you didn't. Okay. And then one of the final aspects that we always want to look at is safety. Mm. Because we put money in a bank, just like this big vault behind me. This used to be an old bank. And cash would sit inside that vault. And people send money. You put money in a bank because it's safe. That's the whole point. If banks weren't safe, or at least didn't have the illusion of being safe, you wouldn't put money in them. So, but when you put your hard-earned dollars into a bank, what are you? What have you become in the bank's eyes?
Yeah. Well, really, you're an unsecured creditor.
Right. So a creditor, the bank owes you money, so you're a creditor, but you're unsecured, meaning it's secured by nothing.
Secured by nothing.
Yeah. There's nothing. There's not an asset securing, like gold there, securing your deposit. There's nothing.
Nope. And if you think the FDIC is really there to back up your money, it can't. If this happened to everybody in the, you know, the banks, sorry.
Oh, there's the dog.
There's the dog. And the banks fail, right? And there's a run on the bank. Not every depositor could go get all of their money.
Right. Because they don't have
it. Right now. They don't have it. So it's not, it makes you feel nice. And you have the little sticker that's on the bank's window and you walk in that it's backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. What that actually means is the Federal Reserve is going to create a bunch of money out of thin air, loan it to the Treasury, which will then fund the FDIC, which will then maybe make you whole or partially whole. But yeah, the money they're giving you is just less valuable. So it doesn't really help anyway.
Because they had to have the Fed print it off anyway to create this new money to right. hand you to make you feel good.
Right.
Yeah.
However, life insurance companies, Dave, right, are completely different. They can't create money.
No, they can't create money out of thin air. You know, life insurance companies have, many of them have 120, 150, 175 year track record of not losing anybody's money. So it's very safe. They're also highly, highly regulated at the state level. They have to keep a certain amount in reserves, you know, a certain amount of their money in cash. And
cash equivalents. Yep.
Yeah. And the historical failure rate of banks versus insurance companies is not even comparable. Banks
It's not even close.
Not even close. Banks have failed. So many more banks have failed than insurance companies. And those insurance companies that have failed have often been weak to begin with, have been maybe smaller, and have typically, you know, their policyholders have been made whole, or those insurance companies have been bought up by bigger companies to kind of take over their assets and liabilities.
Yeah. And if anyone's interested, one of the questions, Dave, that I've got a lot lately is where do the life insurance companies put their money? There's a one pager in the case for IBC. I'm holding up the book. It was written in 2018, put out by the Nelson Ash Institute. They've got a page in there, which breaks down a typical mutual life insurance company's assets. If anyone's interested in that, I just thought that would be a good thing for them to look at while we're talking about banking and whatever.
Yeah. Yep. That's a great book. So there you go. That's kind of the process in a nutshell. Of course, there's so much that goes into the banking process, but just understanding the fundamentals of the banking process is the first step before you even start talking about the product. Now, every process needs a product through which to operate. And it just so happens that dividend paying whole life insurance from a mutual life insurance company is the best product to use on an individual level for the process of banking. And that's what we're going to talk about next week.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's get to it. So anyway, all right. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode and tune in next week. And we'll cover the second part of this, talking about the product. Until then, as always, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle on a future episode, please send us an email to davidandpaul@theibcguys.com.
And subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.